I know my coffee's great because I buy it. But what I want to know is why there's a dead guy in my garage.
We're going back to brewing today on the Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. And what we're out to do today is really provide a service for the person who's trying to enjoy their coffee, but they've encountered some barriers to success. One of the things we say at Stone Creek is we want to prepare for our work, and we want to do it by thinking to the future. And part of doing that in a way that we are sure will pay dividends is to think through what might hinder our ability to be successful and how do we go about avoiding that. With your coffee, often a little bit of prior planning or some in-the-moment ingenuity will help you overcome the things that are trying to screw up your coffee. What we want to do today is provide some hacks, some life hacks for you to help you enjoy, get the most out of your coffee in a bunch of fairly unique environments.
Common challenges that the coffee geek has, say when visiting the family for the holidays. This is often a challenge because many of our families and friends are not coffee geeks, and sometimes I don't necessarily feel like bringing my entire kitchen along with me. You can take your grinder, your coffee brewer, you can take your manual brew equipment and your kettle.
They fill your suitcase with
exactly,
just that.
Exactly. And so it becomes a little bit of a challenge. So you might have an inadequate brewer, you might have inadequate water, the coffee might be sitting around for a long time. I've been able to make some pretty good coffee at home just from following the six essential brewing elements that we talked about in episode a while back.
Yeah.
Just look at our
webpage.
Episode
a while back. Yeah.
We always say that a well-trained coffee professional or a well-trained coffee geek, as we teach in our home classes, can make good coffee off of really bad equipment. So the first thing that you often encounter is the dreaded Mr. Coffee machine. And I think a lot of baristas freak out immediately, like, oh man, if that's a home brewer, it's got to suck. It's got to be terrible. And I hate to break it to you, but it's enough to make a good cup of coffee. And I was really surprised. Like, I used a really junky brewer over the holidays this past, like, December, and I made some pretty killer coffee on it. And I used a blade grinder. And
wow.
I pretty good coffee off of it. And what you have to do is you have to use your coffee-solving techniques. You have to figure out what grind size makes that brewer work exceptionally well, how hot is that water, is the water good going into it, and if you're using a blade grinder like I had to, how many taps does it take to get an acceptable amount of fines in there that it actually tastes like a decent cup of coffee? The one thing that I will say I think is more important than anything, if you are really serious about your coffee, just stop at the grocery store on the way to your family function and grab a bottle of purified water. Or if you're like us, you can just stop. We just stop by one of our cafes and fill up before we go home. Even, you know, 15 miles away from the center of the city here in Milwaukee, and even in the city of Milwaukee, we have some pretty funky water and some pretty funky pipes that get calcium buildup, and the coffee at our factory and at our cafes tastes awesome. But sometimes when you don't filter your water at home, it tastes kind of gross. Bring some filtered water along and you're ready along the next step. Again, look at that blade grinder, because first of all, if it smells like spices, you're gonna have to live with that.
Yeah.
Your coffee,
coriander coffee,
your coffee's gonna be a little spicy. Just, you know, ham it up a little bit, put a little cream in there, and don't let your ego and pride get in the way of enjoying some good coffee.
Cool. So my hack for the blade grinder is actually about separating your grind size. So the blade grinder is actually pretty unique in that as you run it, the coarsest beans will normally settle to the top of the blade grinder as you go. So what I'll do is sometimes just scrape off the top of that, because that's going to be kind of a uniform coarse grind, and then I'll use that, but you have to grind a whole lot of coffee for it. Another option to do to actually separate your fines out is dump all of your coffee out and then just put it through a sifter, and that will take out the smallest particles if you have a decent size sifter that will allow you to end up with a fairly consistent grind size on top, because you can just keep running those coarse grounds through until you get the proper amount of fines, as Christian said earlier. You can either just spot it through scraping off the top, which is not as exact as using a normal kitchen sifter, which I highly recommend.
The other thing to keep in mind is if you got a flat filter on your home brewer, if you have a French press, you don't really need to go that fine with coffee anyways. No. Another little tip for that blade grinder is the pulse and shake technique, which gets you a little bit more even particle size as well. So as opposed to just running the long course 15 cup setting on there and holding it down, pulse it for like 2 seconds, shake it, pulse it, shake it, and then you'll eventually get relatively the right particle size, and you'll get a decent cup of coffee off of it if you follow the rest of the good brewing techniques. The other thing about that at-home brewer is a lot of times the brew head is terrible. And I have a coffee pot at home that I use on the weekends sometimes because I bought it to experiment with, and the brew head is awful. It doses like 5 grams of water like every 15 seconds, and there isn't enough to actually saturate the grounds bed. So if you do a little bit of investigating in there and you're brave enough to open up the water as it's filling up, you can actually let the entire filter bed get full of water, or even better, take a little bit of hot water and bloom that sucker, and then put the hot water down. You'll get a more even extraction. You won't have the dry pockets that you normally have.
So make sure your water's good with that home brewer. Take the temperature of that water as it's coming out. Make sure that temperature is solid. A good extraction level is going to take place between 195 and 205 degrees. You like pitching on that?
Yeah, no, I'm just shaking my head.
Yes, do that.
That's the right brewing. So another thing that you might run into if you go home to the family, and I experience this a lot, and I love my family very much, but sometimes they don't know how to do good coffee, and that's okay. They're still good people. Is that they have a bag of ground coffee just sitting around forever, and that is, for those of us that are really into specialty coffee, that's like, it feels wrong because the aromatics have gone away and there's a lot of good stuff that isn't in there anymore. And so my hack there is to updose like hell.
Yeah.
Because you will get bad flavors if you do a normal dose or a low dose, and it'll turn out being bitter, flat, and kind of stale tasting. But if you updose that coffee, you can try to pull out as much good stuff as still left in those grounds as possible, especially if it's the right grind size. You should be able to get a decent cup of coffee, and if not, I'm sure there's cream and sugar around. You can still get your caffeine fix.
I wouldn't undersell cream and sugar as a hack, especially if somebody offers you coffee. That's all that's there. You don't really have time to make it yourself or mess around with their equipment. Don't say no to cream and sugar because you feel like it makes you less of a coffee person, because it can definitely make your coffee taste better. Like, there are times where I will still add cream because it tastes better with milk. I think that one of God's most profound gifts to mankind is the existence of dairy products for many applications, but definitely to add to really crappy coffee because it is better.
It's funny that someone in Wisconsin says that dairy is awesome. Hashtag cheesehead.
From Texas originally.
Exactly, still cows.
Ended up here.
Yeah. What's interesting is when we're traveling in Central America, South America, a lot of the coffee we get is not good. And you'll actually see all the coffee people putting cream and sugar in their coffee. Because, let's face it, if you're a coffee person, you're addicted to the caffeine, it's better to be social and not have your caffeine headache than it is to just be a coffee snob and not drink coffee without cream and sugar in it.
Or worse, turn down your host. Don't do that. That's not good.
Can you imagine being in Ethiopia at a coffee ceremony and someone's like, nah, I don't like it, it's over-extracted. You just don't do that.
Yeah, no, being gracious is important, especially if you're trying to do business with people. One thing I played around with a lot this week was trying to MacGyver a pour-over. And I think I got it pretty well set. You got to be careful, and you got to take a couple steps. But if you're really, if you brought good coffee, or if you're visiting somebody and you go by a coffee roaster, but don't want to pay for all the brewing equipment, you can get by with a fairly unique pour-over recipe that I developed.
I hope you're going to say what I think you're going to
say.
Well,
you might. Probably, but it's probably going to go farther than you think. So you start with a quart jar, like a quart mason jar, or any big jar that you can actually wrap something around. That's step one, because you need a very large brewing vessel. So large brewing vessel that you can wrap something around the top, a quart mason jar tends to work best. Okay, second thing is you take a sock, a tube sock works best, so a longer-ish sock, but you can't brew straight through that sock. You're going to use it sort of as a filtering method, but it's secondary. It's more for support. Grandma normally has some old hosiery around, so the hosiery actually acts as a better filtering medium than the sock. So the sock provides support, but in that you put some old hosiery. Please make sure these things are clean and they don't actually taste like detergent. You'll want to wash them in warm water without any sort of soap or anything first, and they actually work pretty well. So hosiery goes in the sock, then you sort of roll that over the lid of the quart jar and then put a rubber band over the top. Then you'll use a grind size that's pretty fine, like something you'd use for an AeroPress, a little bit finer than a V60. And you're going to use just a little bit of an up dose. So I was trying to get a 12-ounce drink because that's normally what I brew at home. So I'm trying to get 360 grams of final beverage out. So I'm going to put 32 grams of coffee in at that fine grind. Then all you have to do is bring fairly decent water to temperature, to brewing temperature, about 200, 202 degrees. If you have a kettle but no thermometer, start the kettle, let it come to boil, then take the lid off so it can kind of get some air for about 5 minutes. I've found that to work really, really, really well. And then brew it like you would a V60 or any sort of cone drip medium. But the important thing is actually to do a pretty decent bloom on this sucker. So you want to saturate it good, about 50 grams of water. Let it sit there for a good 30 seconds. Make sure that bloom is solid. And then pour really slowly with your pours. Otherwise, the water goes through your brewing apparatus too fast. So a nice slow pour until you get to 360 grams. Pause after about every 50 grams of water in or so. And it makes a decent cup of coffee if you start with a good product. So I should actually take pictures of that method. Post that. Yeah. We can film that.
You know, that is not the method I was thinking you were going for. And something that I've heard and I've seen done is a really basic kitchen hack of stuff you have around the kitchen. And what this person used was a fine mesh sieve, so a little strainer, and some paper towels. And you basically build your own little pour over a bowl. And you obviously have to finagle the paper towel just right in the sieve, but really, really primitive. But if you have a filtering medium, which is a paper towel, it works.
Yep.
And you have something to kind of catch the grounds in there and kind of focus it down, you can make a decent pour over that way.
Did you have any other brewing hacks?
I do have one more brewing thing that not that I want to get it off my chest, but we're just going to be really honest here. There are some at-home espresso machines that you cannot necessarily hack.
And they just don't work.
And they just don't work well. And if you are looking to get the perfect shot of espresso off of it, you should lower your expectations a little bit. You can get a really interesting, really strong brewed coffee off of it, but the crema is always going to be a little funky. And it's just kind of the way that the system works. It's often it's not a tank-driven machine, it's a pump-driven machine, and the pump is no more than what you find in your normal fish tank. And the portafilter's weird, you don't have a right temp, you don't have the right kind of grinder. Don't get over upset at it. Just modify it so you have something that tastes good. And you have that kind of machine there, it has good water, it has a filtering medium, you have a way to get a decent cup of coffee off of it.
Mm.
But some people come to me and they're like, how do we get the best espresso off of this? And you're just like,
you can't.
Nope.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
So there are some hacks that if it's not if you do some prior planning, you're gonna be set. There are some really easy ways to take good coffee home with you, and one of the best ways I've seen to do this, instead of packing a whole suitcase full, and we mentioned this on a podcast before, is to get a little hand grinder. And what's really cool about Porlex hand grinder, which works awesome, is that it fits inside of an AeroPress, which takes up no space at all. So if you get yourself a Porlex hand grinder, you can actually put that sucker inside of an AeroPress. It does look marginally like a rigged bomb, but as long as you put it in your carry-on and make sure that they see that it's not a bomb,
you'll still get x-rayed and pulled aside.
Which is fine, as long as you show them. It's better than them pulling it out of your suitcase, which would not be good. So that's one way. I've actually taken the small V60, because if you have that in your filters and then there's a good grinder wherever you're going, or if you take a little hand grinder with you, you don't need a kettle and all that. Most of the time, you can bring water to temperature and use like a teapot to pour it. Like I've heated water on a cooktop just in a pot, and then I've dumped that water into a teapot and then used that spout for my pour overs.
That reminds me of something. Something many of you probably don't know is that when you're traveling, if your room doesn't have a good coffee pot or doesn't have a coffee pot at all, but you have this manual brewing equipment along with you, like an AeroPress and a manual grinder, you can call room service if you're staying at a hotel, and they will gladly bring you a carafe of hot water, which is a phenomenal thing if you're doing a pour over in a hotel, because then that hot water is right there. By the time you get the coffee ground, hot water, boom, fresh coffee.
That is a good idea.
I never think about it when I travel. The only other coffee hack that I can think of is, like, you are in the worst scenario possible in terms of coffee, where you go to your family's place or your friend's place, and all they have is freeze-dried coffee.
Oh, like instant coffee?
Instant freeze-dried coffee, and I've been in this scenario before. And my hack for that would be to make a nice iced mocha, especially if you got access to milk and access to chocolate.
Nice.
This is what I grew up on as a kid. In high school, I had these plastic cups with lids, and so I just put a whole bunch of coffee in there, a bunch of Hershey's syrup, milk, and just shake it up. And I kind of, like, grew into the iced mocha when I went to college, too. And it's kind of how I started my coffee. So remember your roots. You know, it's not always terrible to have a sweet beverage. Just don't drink them all the time.
Yeah.
Unless it's part of your regular diet, then drink it all the time.
All the time. Yeah, it's hard to start with bad coffee and make it taste like better coffee. It's really easy to start with good coffee and make it taste bad. But don't rule out the benefits of adding a little something-something. Cinnamon can be a great, easy addition. Most people have some sort of cinnamon. And just get creative with that coffee drink you're working with.
You know, that's actually a pretty cool thing. We used to sell cinnamon coffee, and we've since discontinued it. But all it is a little bit of granulated sugar, a little bit of cinnamon, and some ground coffee all mixed together. If you throw that on the top of a coffee pot, you can probably get something pretty tasty. And you could probably mix in some orange peel or some clove or whatever other spices that you would enjoy going around. It might be pretty good. Especially if you have that spice grinder situation. Just own it.
Embrace it. Our owner once told me, like, if the river's going a certain direction, you can fight it and fight it and fight it because you want it to move the other direction, or you can decide to use it for your own, like, your own purposes. You can jump in the river and go with the flow and just decide to make something out of it. And in the case of coffee out and about, you're often fighting against a river. So just jump in and make the best of what you can with the situation you've been dealt. Sometimes people have some really dope flavored creamers that taste really good. Just view your coffee more as a dessert at that point. Don't take yourself too seriously. We all have to sort of live. It's like.
I think maybe craft cocktails is a good world, because sometimes all you have is really cheap whiskey or really cheap vodka, and the best way to make that taste good is to add things that are sweet, things that are sour. It's the entire prohibition kind of mindset, is you have something that tastes really bad, you add lots of things to it and make it taste good. And understandably, if you have a $200 bottle of whiskey, you might get a little upset if someone's going to put a whole bunch of sugar and other weird stuff in it. And I'll admit that sometimes when we have really expensive coffees, we kind of looked twice. I'm like, nah. But, you know, at the end of the day, if that's really how they enjoy it and they bought it, who cares? Who really cares?
And most of the time, people develop habits with coffee because they're dealing with really bad coffee. And to make it taste good, you have to do all this stuff. And it's a bit of a mind blow to try and convince them otherwise. Own humanity.
I was at a coffee event this past week, and there's a guy who asked the producer if they have a particular preference on how roasters roast their coffee, and if they get upset if they don't roast it a particular way, and what was it. And the question was kind of a leading question, trying to say if people don't roast in a light roasted, third wavy kind of way, that the producer should be upset at the way that the roaster roasts the coffee. And I was kind of like, you know, I kind of get it. Like, we all spend a lot of time sourcing, or a lot of us source a lot of time sourcing really great coffee. And it would be kind of rude to just go and roast whatever we want on it. And I think the producers were, they gave a really generous response and like, oh, I kind of like it roast. Like, they understood their audience. But at the end of the day, we buy coffee from producers, and once the product is out of their hand, it's kind of like ours. And I'm not going to say this like it's a bad thing, because we spend a ton of time developing our product, but once you make that transaction, it's now the property of the next person. And the same thing could be parallel with a barista who sells coffee to a customer. Like, once you make that coffee and pass it off to the customer, they paid for it. It's theirs. They can do whatever they want with it. Like, it's not for us to judge what they're doing on the receiving side, so long as we have a good relationship and you can keep that going. But I just thought it was really, really kind of curious. It was like, do you care when people don't treat your coffee well? And they're like, yeah, I mean, I like it roasted light. I was like, okay.
Of course you do. In that environment, that's what you have to answer. But I've sort of encountered this going home to my parents, who buy Stone Creek coffee, and thanks, Mom and Dad, because I know you also listen to this podcast. And they brew it in a coffee pot, a Cuisinart programmable coffee pot that sits on a burner. And when I was there over Christmas, I was like, you know, Dad, it'll taste more like when I brew it with this pour over thing that I keep doing, if you up the amount of coffee you use. But my dad's a very frugal person, and and my mom doesn't like it terribly strong either, so they brew it sort of how it works for them, the way they like it economically, the way they like it in terms of taste. And I'm just glad that they, like, as parents, that they, like, take pride in what I'm doing and they buy our coffee. Like, that's super cool. And so if I were to just harp on that over and over again, that's really just kind of a dumb and mean thing to do. And I mentioned in the closing of our last episode that it's important for coffee people to realize that we are in the minority, like, and that there's no sort of special light of inspiration and knowledge that we've attained. It's just that we sort of live in a bizarre coffee world compared to everybody else, and we need to know that we are not the norm, and we need to respond with grace and thankfulness when other people interact with us in terms of coffee, because oftentimes they just want to learn, that they feel intimidated serving you coffee already. So try and put them at ease and say, listen, not a big deal, thanks for the coffee, I will enjoy drinking coffee with you, because hey, we all started here. Like, 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, that's not the worst coffee we've ever drunk volitionally.
Coffee is a super social, like, exchange. Like, here's a cup of coffee, I'm welcoming you into my house, let's talk for a little bit. It seems strange that some coffee people, some coffee folks, some coffee enthusiasts will let their ego get in the way in exchange of, hey, do you want a cup of coffee? It's kind of like an open welcoming. It's like if I had said, hey, I have a buffet over at my house, it might not be all the food that you like, but do you want some? People are like, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll take a little bit. I'll enjoy it. It might not be my favorite, but it's something. And we have the opportunity to exchange ideas because of it.
We always appreciate your feedback. You can leave us a review on iTunes, which would be swell of you. Or you can send us an email at podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you have any coffee questions or if there's something you would like us to discuss on the podcast. We got a request from Tia asking to get some more insight into how we got started in coffee and how we sort of developed as coffee professionals. Sometimes you're thinking, wow, I love coffee, I'd love to pursue it as a career, but how do you do that? It's kind of a muddy world, unfortunately, as the industry, the specialty industry, continues to develop. But next time, Christian and I will share some of our stories and how we developed as coffee professionals, hopefully to kind of inspire you if you're thinking to jump in as well. As always, we are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.